Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, everybody? You know who that is. That's Stevie right there. And this is that time again. I'm Citizen Payne, Eric Citizen Payne, otherwise known as K's son. This is K's son and friend. What's happening with you? Happy 4th of July, belated 4th of July, if you're a person who celebrates the 4th of July. Can't say that I do, really. I do, but I don't, you know. You know what it is, being one of the... member of the ethnic group that was treated like the underclass in this society. Underclass, to say the least, right? That's an understatement. So, obviously, with us, 4th of July, while it is a good holiday that we all like to celebrate, it is certainly one that maybe might not be as, chock-filled with positive memories and stuff like that as our, you know, if you lived in the preferential members of society. 4th of July, a couple of things I'm going to talk about. Getting back to something like normal, right? Something like normal. Something almost that looks like normal. Almost a normal 4th of July, almost normal activities back in America. Anybody watched the finals game last night, the first game of the finals, they'll see that, the Phoenix Suns almost had a full house. And, everybody's ready to get out despite the evil one, the umpire, or the ex-umpire, whatever they're trying to do is crazy. But the crazy man and their leader, their Fuhrer, complimented the original Fuhrer. If you listen to the statement that allegedly John Kelly said, that Trump told him that, yeah, but Hitler did some good things. Boy. And, of course, his people deny it. Of course, John Kelly denies it. So what are you going to do with these people? He probably did say that. We know he said derogatory things about Jewish people and everybody else that certainly is different from him, but certainly anybody he doesn't like. And people that don't agree with him anymore, part of his posse. True to form, nothing new to us that really know who the guy was, but we're not really going to focus on him. He's old news. You got to watch some of these news programs that try to act like they're liberal, but they say some things, or they'll throw a broad net over certain topics. I'm thinking of, for example, if you heard the news about the armed men, Rise of the Moors, sometime last week, while we were off the air. Rise of the Moors, right? And these brothers were arrested. They were pulled over. They were heavily armed and technical gear and all that, and they claimed they were going to training. And, if you know anything about the Moors, Byron can get more into that, but they don't believe they're a sovereign nation with the United States. They're not citizens of the United States based on a treaty that does or does not exist. But I was interested to see. I noticed how they were interested in couching that and reporting the news when I first heard about it. Four heavily armed men, and they ran into the woods and this and that. And so I looked it up. And then when I heard the name Rise of the Moors, I looked it up on the news, and I saw on Facebook or YouTube that one of the brothers was broadcasting live, Facebook Live, about the encounter. And so that's what I wanted to know. And I watched, and we're driving up here. We're going to train, and they were allegedly driving from Rhode Island to someplace in Massachusetts, land that they own, and they were geared up. Just like the militias, a lot of the dudes that rolled on the Capitol, right? Brothers was geared up, but they were going for their training. They didn't want to pull over anywhere because the way they were dressed, they had gas tanks in their car in case they needed the gas, because they knew they would alert people. This was the brother narrating this as the experience was going on Facebook Live. And he was saying, we're peaceful. We haven't done anything, but we want to let people know in case they, like the cops do, incite them to or cause them to try to react. You can look it up on YouTube. I'm not going to get into the whole thing, but, judge for yourself the reporting of the news and the reporting of what was happening live. Now, I don't know what happened before that or whatever. The cops allegedly pulled them over because they were pulled over on the side of the road, and a trooper pulled over, I guess because it was at night or whatever, to see what was the issue. And that's when they saw how they were dressed and everything. And so it's just interesting how it was reported and how some people on the political shows that are supposed to be correspondents or contributors on some of these shows, when they talk about issues of terrorism and extremists, how they, threw that in there. And my point is, they could have nefarious intentions, right? They could be. Dude was saying, we're not black extremists. We're not this. We respect you talking to the cops. You guys go see it on YouTube. But my point is that it's a little bit different than white supremacists and extremists that way, who want a way of life which subjugated the people to slavery. I would suggest that these guys' reaction, Rise of the Moors, as black men or people of brown skin tone, probably was a reaction to systematic racism that is felt not only here, but in many parts of the world, right? So to lump them in, when you get some of these talking heads on TV, to lump them in and throw this and conflate the issues and all that without the context, without the specifics, this is what they do, right? And so you have to be really careful about that. It's like I suggested last week that people should start paying attention to politicians like they do their sports and their favorite players and knowing all the stats and the last at bat and what they did, because clearly – people have the mental capacity to break down those numbers and hold those statistics in their head. So hold the statistics of who voted for what representative did what, how they said what, as opposed to when you get these individuals and other individuals in positions of authority who say, well, it's Congress. They need to work it out in Congress, and the whole thing is broke. No, it's not broke. You got to know who specifically it is. And word to some of the non-melanin-enriched people, info. And with that, we'll bring in the fellas. I'm trying to give them a little bit of advice if they want to listen, because, them people act like they're speaking for them. They ain't really speaking for them, but hey, we've been trying to tell them that for a long time. Not all of them believe it. There's some woke ones, if I could use that phrase. What's up, Byron, the legendary historian?
My brother. Yes, sir. Washington, D.C. I got a question for you. Actually, two questions, but because I hear where you're headed with the Moors, and I followed that story as well, very similar to the ones at Stone Mountain that stood down and called them out
right
when they were talking about, the confrontation that they were going to have at Stone Mountain, of course. And the Moors called them out and showed up, and where did the racists and the Confederacy go? They hightailed it, the cowards that they are. That's another whole story, conversation. But my question is relative to defunding the police. Because the question comes back to, if I said to you, let's defund the defense contract budget as opposed to defunding police, what does that say to you? What does that actually say to you, Eric? Because we know what defunding the police has been called an opportunity to take money away from policing and serving communities. But, you see, that's a, I think it's misplaced identity of where the problem really lies. Because when I tell you this, consider this,
well,
defunding the defense budget means taking money away from the gun manufacturers who are making all the guns.
Right.
See, it has nothing to do with defunding the police. It's like we got a gun problem right now in our country. How are we going to get these guns out of people's hands? Well, as soon as that we talk about gun legislation, the first thing that's being cried about is that it's a violation of the Second Amendment rights. Okay. But in the meantime, the pandemic, the issue of defunding the police, Black Lives Matter, has increased gun sales beyond comprehension. So now we got to worry about the extra guns that we got, 300 million guns plus in this country, and only 350 million people. Eric, do you own an armament? Because if you don't, we're way behind. So we got to have somebody like the Moors, okay, who, like Black Panthers, stood up in essence to mandate that the law be used equitably across the border. Now, we know they don't want Black folks having guns. But when you talk about defunding the budget for arms defense, because that's the same concept that Obama was doing in his second term, if you may recall, police reform engaged reducing the defense contracts. And that's when Mitch McConnell and what's his name down in South Carolina, all the red states were throwing up, oh, no, you can't do that, you can't do that. The reasons why is because the employment of the gun manufacturing industry for defense weaponry is in the southern states. They
right.
were raising hell, and not because of Obama, but making the claim of, you know, well, we're going to reduce crime. Everybody wants to reduce crime. But he wanted to reduce the defense budget. And here's the reason why. Over 65 cents of every tax dollar goes where? To the defense budget. And so when it comes time for infrastructure, we're talking about 1, 2% of the GDP. That ain't no money. That's no money.
Right.
So now we got now think about it. The impact of seeing a building in a very well-gated Jewish, predominantly Jewish community fall to the ground because of incompetent contractors. Second question is, do you know any politician who doesn't have a contractor in his back pocket?
Well, I don't think they all have
think
them in
about
their back
that.
Pocket. I think that's you're broad stroking
that's
exactly.
A major,
you're broad stroking okay. exactly what I was just talking against. There probably is some that don't have some in their back pocket. First off, I never really agreed with the phrase defund the police, although I started thinking about it after a minute. But I don't think that was the right phrase to get behind. Nobody wanted not to have a police force. They meant obviously something else, but that was the rallying cry. I do agree with you with the connection slightly with the Defense Department and the defund the police program in terms of them, from my perspective, the Defense Department selling and making defense weapons, military weapons available to these police departments like those Bearcats and all these militarized
exactly.
equipment to use on police forces when you're policing your own. However, the Defense Department has been an issue and the budget, how much they get of the American budget has been an issue for years. And, you know, the military-industrial complex, I think President Ike Eisenhower made references to that in a speech that we have to beware the military-industrial complex because of those contracts, you know. So they keep finding ways and police weapons and making guns available to police forces is one way that they can keep their contracts going. But we know certainly – ordering those big tanks and bombers and all that is another, you know, big defense department of defense items. And certainly, obviously, representatives that live in those states, of course, and especially the Republican ones are going to want to keep those contracts going. Let's get Wayne in here real quick. Wayne Gilman, the legendary newsman. Wayne, Eric Adams. Eric Adams wins New York. Speaking of,
yeah, I'm not surprised, you know, by that. But just piggybacking on what you guys were talking about, I wasn't aware of the Morris situation. But as Byron pointing out, you know, and I hate to refer to the description of being subversive, but these nonconformist groups that come up from time to time in different parts of our country, there's a reason for that because of how we have been offended over the years in different ports of call. But as you talk about defunding the police, that ties in with the election that just recently, and it's only primaries. We're not even talking about the real deal yet. But it looks like New York City, the very year that we lost the first black mayor, is going to have a second one who is a retired New York City police officer who is critical of the department, allegedly joined the force to make changes and had been criticized by some elements within the force who felt that his changes weren't worthy. But given the climate of what's going on in New York and a lot of the large cities and small cities around the country, shooting is out of hand. I can only speak specifically of what's happening in my backyard, and we got this issue called bail reform that they're trying a new way of policing in which some of these people who have been locked up and don't deserve, I mean, if anything, they need to be exposed to something that would make their lives far more constructive while they've been locked up. But some of them are out in the street, and they've caused a certain degree of lawlessness. And quite frankly, Eric Adams capitalized on that because the mayor didn't seem to know what he was doing. And the governor just recently stepped in with his own plan. It's going to be interesting to see how that meshes, you know, if Eric Adams officially gets in. On the Republican side, you have Curtis Sliwa, who's been barking for years, and no one's listening.
Yeah, no.
You know, he'll probably go back to talk radio.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
and,
Wayne,
trying to talk policing to an ex-cop. I mean, just by the fact that Eric Adams was a police officer in this climate was obviously to his benefit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, as he tells the story on the air frequently, that he was arrested as a child, and
right,
he decided
to
join forces to make a difference in the system. Now, I recently had a retired police chief of police on the air who was highly critical of Eric during the course of his tenure in the police department for different things. He was perceived as being somewhat of a maverick, as, you know, at one time he was a member of the Republican Party. But maybe we need someone like this at this particular time.
Exactly.
In New York, because all the other candidates, you know, even with the distinguished background of Maya Wiley, the civil rights attorney, just weren't coming to the fore, you know, and the only other person who was making a lot of noise and seemed to be working in his favor in the beginning was Andrew Yang, but I think he was just getting support as a result of his, you know, appearing on the national scene as a presidential candidate and not succeeding.
Right.
You know, so it's going to be interesting to see what happens here. But the bail reform issue, I think, is largely a problem. If you're going to put some of these people out on the street, and you know, I understand, you know, the Republicans and the far right took that whole issue of defunding the police department to work in towards their credit. No one wants a lack of civility, regardless of where they're living. I don't give a damn who you are, you know. No one wants to roll up at their house or stop in a neighborhood where there may have been something going on unbeknownst to you, and then you suddenly have bullets flying at you. And it was getting to that point, you know.
Right.
Even this past weekend, you know, I could go on and on, but it's nothing new, but something's got to give. And,
yeah.
You know, I don't know what the answer is, but hopefully somebody will come up with something that would work.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the things we're kind of overlooking is the political body of the five borough system. Three of the five boroughs, and as it is as of today, will have a black person as borough president. One in the
right.
Bronx is a former. One is a black male in Queens. And Eric Adams right now is in Brooklyn. I don't know in the history of New York City ever when that has happened. So there is a dynamic that is really transitioning. And yes, Wayne, you're absolutely right. The gun issue is a serious dynamic that we're going to have to deal with. And that's why I'm talking about defunding defense, because at the point at which when you're going to talk about infrastructure money that's definitely needed right now, infrastructure to keep buildings from falling down because contractors have made deals with the devil in development, especially in Florida.
I agree. But I tell you
what I'm talking about. Okay? At some point, we have got to address the systemic issue, not just talk about guns and gun reform. That won't make no difference whatsoever. None. It ain't going to change nothing.
You're talking about starting at the root. You're not going to get anywhere talking about defund anything within the structure. I mean, let's be honest about it. So, I mean, once you say that, it's just a flashpoint that makes people, because I don't want to defund the Defense Department. If you say that, like, how are we going to be defense? So,
Eric, hold on for a second.
Let me make my point, brother.
How many bombs do we have in our nuclear files?
I'm not questioning that. I'm not doubting that at all. I'm just talking about getting people
right now that can destroy the world. Do we really need more of that? Or is it necessary to have less of that because your infrastructure is dying? We got bad water systems.
There's what is. There's what ought to be.
Okay.
Right? I mean, you could talk. I mean, let's we'll talk about from a pragmatic perspective, right? And since this is from a pragmatic perspective, if you say to somebody,
yes,
just like the flashpoint was defund the police, and people have a visceral reaction. When you talk about defunding the Defense Department, they're going to have an equal visceral reaction. Let me give you an example on the other side, if I may. Recently, John Kennedy, the bad one from Louisiana, he was talking about, I think we need to bring in his true Southern, I'm sure, ex-former Klansman, card-carrying ex-Klansman or junior Klansman when he's growing up. He said, I think we need to bring back stop and frisk, and because it's getting out of hand, and just have it happen in a racially neutral perspective. Well, right on. But when you say stop and frisk, the words are a flashpoint to people. So you automatically turn people off or have trouble getting them to meet you, even sit out at the table to talk about it. So that's what I'm talking about in those statements like defund the police, defund the Defense Department. We all know that we should. We all know that we have millions of bombs or whatever. But what you're talking about is something they've been talking about for the past 40 years, that the Defense Department has had too much money. Longer than that, like I said, Ike was a general in the military. He knew what they were getting out of hand. So if he said it in one of his addresses before he left office, come on. I mean, you know, that's big business. And their business
now,
is we make
now,
guns, you know?
Yeah, not only is it big business, but then remember what I talked about last week. I mentioned Donald Rumsfeld, completely and evil individual.
Agreed.
Did
on
you
all
know
fronts.
That he
more
lived
than Dick Cheney?
In the house? Hold on. No, worse than
they're
Dick
frat,
Cheney.
They're frat brothers.
This is a man who lived in the house where, as his
residence. Oh yeah. Right.
The house
right.
in which Frederick Douglass was sent as a slave to be broken. What does that tell you about that kind of individual?
Say it again. Break that down
this
for people who just
Donald
found out.
Donald Rumsfeld, who was defense secretary under Nixon and then under Gerald P. Ford,
mm-hmm.
started the Iraqi war on January 15th, you may recall. But he lived in his residence, which he owned, was the property for which the plantation where if you were a out-of-control black slave who needed to be broken, they sent this broke sent black men to be broken in the house and the farm and the plantation for which Donald Rumsfeld was living.
This is in D.C.? This location?
Virginia.
In Virginia.
Well,
yeah,
Maryland, one of those two things. In Virginia, Maryland. But ultimately, this is what we are talking about when we have to deconstruct the evilness of the institution that has impacted right now 30% of our nation. Now, we're talking about numbers now, fellas.
Of course.
Because this is an individual who personified, in my opinion, what kind of a man finds pleasure living in a house known to break men, black men. Break
the same
black buck breaking them. Okay.
The same type of cats that put up statues to the motherfucker, excuse my language, the same type of cats that put up statues to the dude that perpetuated it. What you're saying is it's not surprising to me. And this reminds me of the old, I guess, kind of the argument within our people, right, about tactics, because we know what we're up against. We know those facts. It's not surprising that one of them is going to live in a slave quarter. Let's look at what Brian Kemp did when he signed that anti-voting law, right, and how they staged that in front of that plantation painting. So we know all that. We know how despicable these people are. But what we need to work through and to achieve our objective and to be a little Machiavellian about is what tactic we're going to take. And so I'm telling you, I'm getting ready to tell you. To me, the tactic that we take does not, if you're going to try to sneak up on them or trying to give somebody the medicine without them knowing it, then you're not going to say stuff like, we need to defund the police. Because even black people weren't 100% about that. People who live in the hood that Wayne is talking about or that you live down there in D.C. where cats brothers are shooting at each other, they're not trying to defund the police. They want the right police there. So to me, that's why, to me, drawing the thing with Eric Adams being mayor, we need more black people to be within the system, certainly more black police officers. I was going to say more black people with guns because we could use that as well because, you know, a deterrence by equal strength usually gives people a little bit more pause to act indiscriminately. So certainly that's why you see the rise in gun club memberships amongst African Americans since Trump has been in office, to be able to defend ourselves against people who live in those areas where they have to take it to that. But certainly, flashpoint words that completely turn off people who might be allies, and let's face it, we clearly have needed some people to be allies with us until we're able to vote 100% as a monolithic block, then you have to work out your tactics and be stealth with it and up your game. That's all I'm saying. I mean, all the slogans and all that stuff is great, but you know, that has a tendency to push people to extremes too. And I'm down with the get down, but if we're trying to get to the next step, the next level, then we have to understand what went on before us, how that game didn't work or did not work, and study them game films and see and do what we need to do. You know, I don't
I understand what you're saying, Eric. I also blame the media for basically putting that whole defunding police thing
in a completely
different area of life that it need not even be. I mean, even former President Barack Obama said it was not the tactic to use when it was out there. And words are powerful. I mean, we have to concern ourselves when we're going up against these folks who don't necessarily want to accept us, and largely they're Republicans. Anything to do with defense spending has been a Republican issue the last 40 years or more, So, I mean, the deal is that we all know that America has been falling apart. You just go around the corner every time you hit a pothole. I bet you go through Haiti and the roads are better down there than they are here. You know, and that's a whole other story by itself. But the bottom line is, it's shameful.
It's beyond shameful. It's criminal. Because see, using words, I'm gonna go along with you, what you're saying, guys. Using words that are trigger words, shameful is a bad word to use. It's gone beyond that. It's just like right now. How are we as a nation going to put an end to the Confederacy movement that's in our Congress right now. We have traitors. We're literally negotiating with terrorists. How are we going to end that? Because at the point at which, if there is no system of justice to deal with that forthrightly, we're just playing a game. And I don't know about y'all, but I'm really tired of the game. And I'm getting very upset with my so-called nation of, you know, I'm living here in Washington, D.C., so the BS that's going on right now up there on Capitol Hill is that we have literally criminals who are trying to portray themselves as politicians.
You know what,
if they're not removed, if they are not removed, there is
no
way
this
justice
when you really want to break it down, it's always been like that, right, son?
I'm just telling you guys.
You ain't saying nothing new, though. It's always been like that, dude. That's what I'm saying. Ronald Reagan was a criminal. Ronald Reagan was a criminal. You watched the documentary, The Kings, when we saw Reagan do those things. It's always been like that. That's what we're talking about. We got to come up with a new tactic. Come on, money.
Well, the old tactic is that we're using right now is run into a brick wall because the system is not accommodating the rule of law. And I'm trying to tell you guys, now what they're doing in the state of New York with reducing Trump and his businesses to rubble is exactly one of the tactics that has to happen. You guys take all his money away.
That's exactly right.
Yeah,
let's put a pin in that, bro. Let's move on to the next
market
subject
that he's been playing in. It's going to work.
Let's put a pin in that, B. All right, bring it to an end. Let's bring it to an end because I want to move to another subject because we got about another 27 minutes. I want to talk about your alma mater with your girl Nicole Hannah Jones passing on the tenure when they finally decided at the last minute to give the sister tenure at her alma mater, University of North Carolina. And Howard University offered the sister tenure, and she decided to take that. So
if we're going to make a change happen, and we're going to have our leadership, our leaders, our black leaders, male, female, it doesn't matter any party, but leadership of presence, we need to come back into our own community and take charge. I'm all in favor of them coming to Howard, okay?
Right.
The recognition that we, right now, it's an HBCU vice president, Howard.
Mm-hmm.
We just liberated a tenured professor, should have been tenured, to come home.
Right.
With Ta-Nehisi, coach.
That's right.
And her, the two of them. We got Felicia Rashad at Howard University. Yeah, it's all in controversy, but guess what? These are the things that have to happen in order for us to stabilize the foundation of our village, not just the United States village, our village. And when this happens, and you see somebody like going to Jackson State, Mississippi, what's his name, Deion Sanders, the coach, he's bringing with him qualified personnel who can't get a job in the NFL.
Right.
This is the things that will happen. So
our community
is literally understanding the ramifications of bringing your talents and your skills back into the village to not only raise a child, but to protect the village. This is what's going to have to happen. We are in a war right now, and we're not going to lose this Confederacy to the Confederacy again, and it won't happen because the numbers are in our favor. Now, they don't understand it. They are losing power, and they're scared as hell. Good.
Yeah, I would like to see a lot of these brothers I'm talking about the athletes that make the money for these schools, especially UNC.
Yeah.
You know, all we got to do is put a blackout on them, on all the brothers coming there to blow up their basketball and football and all their athletic programs.
Yeah.
And they would definitely change their tunes, especially now since brothers can get paid off their likeness from the NCAA.
Yeah.
Now, that's what I want to see. And I'm glad to see people like Dion and other people, Master P's son, committed to a black school upon graduating high school as a young basketball player. So I'm happy to see the sister. I mean, that was her alma mater. Unfortunately, she chose not to go to an HBCU, but she's there now, got her now, and she can help educate those minds.
That's true. That's right. See, because we're building a foundation of a community and a nation. You know, the problem with our nation right now is that our community assets have been deteriorated to a point in which I don't know if they actually can be saved. You can throw money at it, but money is not going to solve every issue, okay? Mm-hmm. And with some of this has to be relative to cultural significance, okay?
Right.
They're misappropriating everything we create, everything.
Right.
From music to you call it, okay? So we might as well reclaim what is ours.
Absolutely.
And it's unfortunate because what happened in Haiti the other day, 2 days ago, is significant mm-hmm. to what they've been doing to us and Haiti ever since Toussaint Louverture defeated Napoleon.
That's true. And you know what, guys, let me ask you guys if you had a chance, moving on to something else that I think is really important. And since you're a Howard guy, but I want to also get into Summer of Soul. But have you
I'm
guys
a Hampton
seen,
guy.
Have you guys, I mean,
I'm a Hampton, guy.
Hampton guy, sorry, I forgot. I know that didn't work out.
Come on, pirate.
The Dick Gregory documentary
yes.
really it gives people an enlightenment to Dick Gregory. Wayne, did Dick Gregory ever come through LIB during the time you guys were there?
Oh, yeah, all the time. Imhotep Gary Bird's program, he would come mm-hmm. because they had that vegetarian thing together. And,
right.
you know, great guy, very, very, you know, to this day I still miss him because he was on point about a lot of things. You know, he might have been, you know, getting older, but his mind was just as youthful as it could be.
Right.
You know, and it's unfortunate that he left us a while ago, but he left a dynamic legacy, which is really what, you know, what we're all building right now, man. I'm hearing you and Byron talk about, you know, the whole issue of not to drift into the whole Howard thing again, but I came up at a time, you know, and influenced by my parents, new immigrants to this country, you know, who had doubts about me going to an all-black mm-hmm. school. And I used to enjoy myself. I am not going to... Howard University had the baddest parties back in the day and the finest women on the planet. I ain't never seen black women before like I've seen in Howard, you know, to this day. But, you know, I think it's so important that we have to support our HBCUs because that's all we got. That's all I got to say.
You know, I learned. Good, I'm sorry.
No, I'm just saying that, you know, we have to instill, and not so much instill, but expose new immigrants to our shores that there's nothing to be ashamed about attending institutions,
right.
even though they may have been misinformed by other outside influences and things like that. But again, I'm going to the thinking of people 60, 70 years ago who just did not connect because of a vacuum, an information vacuum. Let's put it that way.
I learned that Dick Gregory, I learned that he was a soldier from his early years about how attached he was to Medgar Evers. You know, recent years of people catch a lot of young people were getting hip to him and would have him interviewed and come on the shows. Charlemagne had him come on, and you can find any number of interviews of young brothers that have these little interview shows on YouTube. And Dick Gregory, a couple of times I would turn him off because he sounded like he's talking crazy, and he was angry. And it made sense in the documentary they talked about towards the end. He had early onset of Alzheimer's, which kind of was part of the reason why he might have come across angry at one point. But I realized, and I got that understanding. I was like, oh, that made sense. And they had Chris Rock and Kevin Hart. Yeah, everybody should watch that documentary. It's really good. But they talked about that too. And then towards the end, when he started getting his respect again and people started really checking for him, and he seemed like it was, you know, something that people understood about him, it was cool. But to me, I learned that this guy was such a soldier and how much ahead of his time he was when he began the fast and he started to lose his weight. And talked about he met this woman who was a nutritionist, and that's how when he went on his fast, he was able to get his nutrition. And this guy was running across country, like running states, while Byron was drinking juice and stuff. and came up with the whole thing with the Bahamian diet and how he would mix his old stuff and wanted people to start drinking water. Kathy Hughes said he was the first one to start telling us that we need to drink more water. And now all these years later, and with the Bahamian diet, and they were trying to present it on a multi-level marketing, giving black people an opportunity at this business. This guy was ahead of his time, you know, trying to keep the black dollar in the community, trying to help with the health. You know, and it really struck me, and I really am thankful and appreciate the contribution that he had. And also the fact that he would pay money out of his pocket as opposed to getting paid for his comedic gigs before he just jumped off into the movement totally. You know what I mean, Byron?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
He was
the
Dave Chappelle of his day, let me tell you.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Even more political than Dave Chappelle.
Absolutely.
Is,
I was just going to say that, yeah.
I was listening to some of Dave's material recently. In fact, today, just earlier today. And you're right, comparing Dick Gregory to today's comedians, Dave Chappelle is as close as probably you're going to get to a Dick Gregory, but
right.
Dave was not as politically politically keen on so many areas. We now know that Dick Gregory started off political commentary.
Right.
Ended up,
that was his comedy.
You know, with his comedy, and then he merged the two, realizing he could do both and still make sense out of the nonsense that's going on, challenging
right.
everything and everybody.
Right.
Nothing was sacrosanct to him. He went after everything.
That's right. And it was done in a way, it was an all-encompassing way, as was Dr. King's movement of, like, it wasn't solely extreme black power or for black people only.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, he was just trying to reach people on a very human level. Because some of the jokes, if you look at, I don't know if you saw that, you guys saw the documentary, or you guys are familiar with them, I'm sure. But some of the material he was doing back in the, you know, in the black and white TV days related to that.
Oh, yeah.
In front of white audiences, and they were getting, you know, it was subtle, but it was clearly political, but they were getting, they were appreciating laughing at it, you know, because he was pointing out the absurdities of things from a very intelligent, educated way too. You had a suit, he was talking, you know, he wasn't trying to present himself in the previous earlier generations kind of image or game plan of lack of a better word. Of the buffooning and the, you know, the Mantans and Step and Fetch It, those brothers were relegated to that type of comedy, performing that way. Once Dick Gregory and these guys come along, they're moving it into a new direction, a new area of black people speaking to you from an educated, intellectual standpoint. And this comedy is you know, somewhat cerebral and this and that, but and it's also with a message too, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's so true. And he was blackballed because of his position.
Right.
But they couldn't keep him from talking to us. He talked to us with some serious stuff, even with his Bahamian diet situation. He came legitimate. He talked about the obesity in our community because of the reliance on eating pork products, you know? And it's like, who would do that, you know? Unless you were an activist, understanding the ecology, the economics, the scraps from the table that we were always given. I mean, he broke it down so that you understood it from an elementary point of view in how and why you had diabetes or heart pressure, high blood pressure.
Right. I mean, that's what I'm talking about. This guy was ahead of his time talking about obesity way back then. I mean, the only time...
Yeah.
You know, you remember the Walter Hudson, the guy in Long Island, Wayne, that he was trying to help, and that kind of brought him to the forefront of dealing with obese people. But it wasn't as well known and just commonplace. Now it's commonplace. You know, you've got to try to address through diet your diabetes, a problem within the black community, as you said, Byron, obesity, all of these things that he identified all these years ago. So, I got to give a big respect to our brother Dick Gregory, because that was a black man that was truly ahead of his time.
And you say there's a documentary out on his life right now?
Yeah, it's on Showtime
now. I wasn't aware of it.
Yeah, it's on Showtime now.
Oh, Showtime, okay. Yeah, I got to make it a point to check that out.
One of the things that I think that's going to hit us more than just COVID notions, because we're going to get through this, is how are you going to stop black people from smoking menthol cigarettes? This is huge, guys.
This is
not just a plane. This is huge. You just mentioned someone smoking a Newport. You know, I mean, the market that targeted us, the market that targeted us to buy menthol cigarettes,
right?
Brown and Williamson, you know, all the tobacco companies, Reynolds, you know, all of them engaged in what can surely be considered an attempt to drug us with cancer. You have to go there.
Look at the vaping situation. Now, the vaping thing is supposed to stop people from smoking.
Thing? That's right. But now you're taking away a market that's literally mostly impacting African Americans. That's a medical situation that's getting ready to hit. Okay.
Yeah.
Because you can't. Now you're going to legalize buying marijuana. Okay. Fine. You know, does anybody remember Virginia Slims and the effort of Brown and Williamson to make a thin cigarette to come make it look like you were smoking a joint? Come on, folks.
Oh, is that what
we're talking
about? Is that what the
concentrated effort?
I thought that was supposed to be the women's cigarette, and they wanted to make it slim because
it
was
but,
a beauty thing. I didn't know that was it.
I got an award from Brown and Williamson on the Cool Achiever Award when the Cool Jazz had its high day with wine, you know, promoting the Cool Jazz Festival. Well, they gave out money to 5 individuals for about 3 years, considered to be the top of their business, one in community service, medical, in art and entertainment. I got one for art and entertainment. Gave me $10,000 to give to my theater company.
Nice.
Brown and Williamson. That's right. Nice. Cool Achiever. Pushing cool cigarettes.
Did you have to give out cigarettes to the company?
Yeah, no, I didn't have to do any of that.
Give you cards
you know,
and cigarettes.
Ultimately, and I smoked
the vending machine
in
the lobby.
But
what year was that?
This is 86, 87.
Wow.
Okay? So it's not that far back ago. All right? And now today, 2021, you're going to ban menthol cigarettes to a community where you pushed it like you were pushing crack and other cocaine? Come on. Tell me some brothers who smoke Winston's, and I'll show you 10 that said, to hell with that. Give me a Newport.
I mean, that was definitely it. They're probably gonna make menthol marijuana cigarettes. Hey, we got another like 10 minutes
about.
Wayne, what about? Hey, let's move to this. The Harlem Cultural Festival. There's a documentary.
Yes.
That's gonna be on Hulu,
yes.
Called The Summer of Soul, and it was 1969.
Yes.
Wayne, during the Summer of Soul, thousands of people attend the Harlem Cultural Festival. Celebrate. Were you there? Either one of you guys?
Well, I have to say that I wasn't, but a lot of the people who were there were people that I later got a chance to work with. You know, it was at Mount Morris Park. I saw, you know, Gladys Knight. I used to appreciate Nina Simone so much. At the time, what is now WBLSM was WLIB-FM, which was a jazz station. And all they would play all day was like Nina, all sorts of great artists of our community, and it was the hip thing to do. But I was still in high school in 69, and, you know, my parents had this thing about you going up to Harlem by yourself, so just
you
one of those deals.
You couldn't ride the subway?
No, I could take the subway. You know, oh, please. You know, if it didn't happen in Brooklyn, I had to sneak. And I can tell you stories about things sneaking, you know, like some family member caught me one day standing outside the Apollo Theater trying to get in to see James Brown, man. And by the time I got back to Brooklyn, I don't want to tell you what they would have been locked up for what they did to me. So,
Hey, back in those days, it was a serious gang problem, right, in New York, right? When you guys went to different
boroughs. Oh, yeah, police. Right, you know. I mean, we talk about the shootings now, but back then everybody had knives. You had the Jolly Stompers, the Chaplains, the Baldies up in the Bronx, you know, all sorts of gangs that were going on. Past a certain hour, you didn't want to be out in the street, but somehow today seems worse than it was then.
Yeah.
It really does, you know.
That's true. Hey, Bobby, did you check out? Go ahead, Wayne.
I just wish I had a chance. I intend to see it because it's a dynamic film, and everything that I've read about it, you know, it's something that actually happened in that community. And Harlem has been the bedrock of black culture for years. It's unfortunate what's going on with the whole gentrification in both Harlem and Brooklyn, Bed-Stuy.
Yeah,
you know, New York is changing.
Yeah.
If the year was 1969, because if I'm recalling, this is the soul was the answer to Woodstock.
Right, it was a black Woodstock.
I was in Europe in that summer, and heard about it.
Oh, you was in Europe.
Believe it or not, I saw Woodstock at a movie house in Amsterdam. Okay, the same year, so. Exactly, and you know, and then to come back to Washington D.C., and then go back out to University of Kansas, culture shock. Okay, because you know I grew up with Motown and the Philly sound and Stax. Those, you know, yeah, going to a white, predominantly white Catholic high school, and then going to Kansas. You know, I got indoctrinated to the Bee Gees and the groups who I really love, Crosby, Stills, Nash, Young. You know, it was a wonderful tour de force of music, but you know, culture shock, Motown, all of that. You know, how many groups did that you know of, big name groups, were associated with Heard It Through the Grapevine? Now, see, only a black person can tell you this, because they know that Marvin Gaye did it. They know that Gladys Knight Phipps did it. But then there's a whole generation that thinks that the Raisins made the song.
Oh. that's the problem.
Misappropriation of our culture.
That's an old commercial.
Yeah,
even that commercial is old, bro. That Raisin commercial.
That commercial is old. Think about it.
those people that believe that, they're 45 now. The motherfuckers.
But you see, the thing is, Eric, they won't take the time to do the research to find out that it was originated by Gladys Knight Phipps.
I think those individuals have. But God forbid there are kids who don't know that wasn't.
Oh, yeah.
They don't know, and they're not taught any of the history that is significant to us. So when you think about a 1619 project, and as we started this conversation with the tenure being given to I call Shiro and Hero at Howard University, it's only because they refuse to acknowledge our history as American history. We got history, folks. That's why it's important. We don't forget the history, because they try to pull the okey-dokey and the shoeshine on us all the time. None of this has happened before. Excuse me? Y'all don't remember Tulsa?
Well, that's what I say.
Excuse me? Y'all don't remember Rosebud? Y'all don't remember Detroit? Y'all don't remember the great martyr of all time, Rodney King? Can't we all get along?
They don't remember it, bro. They don't remember it, or they don't revere it like we do. You know, that's what I was talking about, like going back to what I was talking about earlier. You get all these talking heads that are so surprised that this is going on. How can they let this go down? Because that's their objective. You know, like Mitch McConnell said, they're going to try to obstruct Joe's his agenda for the next 2 years if they can. So that's their objective. So all these people that are surprised that, oh, I can't believe they're not really American and they're not living up to the Constitution, all that. That was never their intention. They were never intending to play by the rules. It's not a surprise to me. My vibe is like, F them, let's keep moving forward, ever, backward, never, and do what we got to do. I'm not worried about what they're talking about. If they're in the way, they're going to get run over, because we will have the right for self-determination as a people. And we ain't playing these times. And if y'all, they best learn what time it is. You know, we're not really concerned about that.
And we learned it, because this is what's important. You just,
we got 4 minutes.
You just recited the preamble to the Declaration of Independence. We the people. You just recited
Yeah, but they wasn't living by that. But you keep, that's
what I'm talking about.
I understand. We make them live
to
that, up to that contract, but they ain't going to do it. So until they do it, we'll work that side too, but we need to work side two over here, is what I'm saying. So,
show is so important than others. That's why we need to beat this drum once a week.
Right.
You know,
I messed around.
Because people will listen.
That's absolutely. I messed around as we go out to, like, we got 3.5 minutes, but I messed around and watched from the entertainment perspective, right? Watching, try to find something to watch on Netflix, and I messed around and watched that show, Brigadon. You know what I'm talking about, right, Byron?
I mean, you don't want to talk about that. I don't watch that much TV.
It's kind of BS, but, you know, I watched the first episode. I was like, okay, how are they going to, you know, because I was trying to see how they're going to tell the story. How are they going to make it realistic that these black people are in here walking around like it's okay, right? So I ended up watching, ended up binging the whole season, like the whole day, right? And I was interested, you know, it's really Harlequin novel stuff, more like for women and romance, and that's all what it is. I don't need to see any more Elizabethan or that era. They keep beating that drum over and over again, which is why I never even wanted to watch that or Game of Thrones or any of that bullshit. But I got into how they were telling the story of the Charlotte, the Black Queen, Byron, and also how this guy was a duke. And how he came to be, because his mentor, the lady, broke it down to him, like what Charlotte represented, how they were able, as black people, to be a part of the society. So I was happy to see that they tied some sort of realism and historical context to it, you know?
But you see, Eric, what you just defined was a piece of Americana history that most people don't realize, that the borough of Queens, New York City, was named after Queen Charlotte. And his crazy husband, King George.
Exactly.
Okay? So we really have an issue with history.
That was English history.
The truth of history. That's American history. Okay?
Yeah, that was the English history. That's the Brigadon
Queen during the British control of the continental United States before we became the United States. Okay?
She was queen during that time.
Because it's not being taught. And then when we have a situation where we have Meghan Markle, who is the Duchess of Essex, getting racially profiled and treated like any other Negro in the United States because she happens to be in the lineage of the family that had, make no mistake about it, she got married on Queen Charlotte's birthday.
There it is. That's the last word, brother. We got to go. That's the last word. We got 1 minute left. Byron, give the people your send-off while you're at it.
All right. Peace and love always. Thank you, my brothers and sisters, for being and recognizing you have the power as a majority. One man, one vote. Use your power.
All right.
Peace and love. Always.
Good discussion. Talk to you again. Wayne Gilman, the legendary news
All the
man.
Best. My brothers, I just hope you all hang in here and keep the faith alive. That's all.
All right. Well, watch that Dick Gregory show, bro.
I intend to. Yeah. Okay.
Legendary newsman. Didn't mean to cut you off quite there. This is K's son. I'm K's son. It's K's son and friend. You know we be talking trash to each other with our discussions because we like to keep it lively. Strong men, strong opinions, and strong attitude from a strong people. I just made that up off the top of the dome, kind of like Jay-Z, since he claims he writes on the back. I believe it. I'm out. Citizen Payne, K-Sun.
We can work it out. We
You